This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Russell. Today we have two of BFM's finest. We have Shamila Ganesan of the
I'm with the Bigger Picture team. I do Front Row and By the Book and Daily Digest.
Exactly. That's a lot of stuff. And then we have, he is the power behind the Morning Run. He is the power behind Morning Run. He is Sim Weeboon.
Hello, thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
And this time I got your name right.
Yay! Thank you, Curry.
Our three topics this week are, topic number one, dating app cliches. Topic number two is award shows. Are they still relevant? And finally, topic number three, Quentin Tarantino. Is he still relevant? So, Shamila, dating app cliches.
Yes. So over the last year and a half or so, I have been trying out some of these dating apps. And very quickly, Tinder, Bumble, Coffee Meets Bagel, anything I'm missing out?
Sure, I don't know.
Those are the main three that I've had a look at.
OkCupid.
OkCupid, a bit not relevant really, yeah. Right?
Well, no, they have the app. That
See, I
like
never
it.
Used the app. Because I used OkCupid back in the day when it was a website and then I stopped. But anyway, so these three. And what I've realized, I'm looking primarily at profiles of men. And after a while, you find these cliches that pop up all the time.
Oh.
And after a certain point, I'm just wondering, is it because people are just bad at writing profiles? Or are people just generally cliched? Or is it because they think this is what women want to see? So some of the cliches I see are pictures of men with tigers, or pictures of men at the gym in front of the mirror, or pictures of them skydiving or diving under the sea, or diving in some way.
Really?
And the thing that I've noticed pops up more and more are men describing themselves as sapiosexuals. And so each, like, so many men describe themselves as sapiosexual.
So this is a new one to me, and I don't think I've fully grasped it. What is a sapiosexual?
It's someone who is turned on or attracted to intelligence.
More than beauty.
That's what they say.
Okay.
Until they meet someone smarter than them.
Also, they spell sapiosexual wrong, so I'm not sure. So it was something that sort of started slowly, so you'd see it once every few profiles. Now I see it in like every other profile, to the point where I'm just like, I don't think you're a sapiosexual if you think you're a sapiosexual.
So what they're saying is, hey, I'm an active guy. I'm a physical person. Mm-hmm. But I'm also at the same time sensitive enough that actually it's your intelligence that I'm interested in.
It may not be all the same guy. Oh, the other cliche is the traveling cliche. I've traveled to 30 countries around the world. Right. I've been to 40 countries around the world. These are the flags of all the places that I've traveled to. And I don't know, guys. Like, maybe you think you're the only person writing the profile like this, but no, everyone writes their profile like this.
But hang on, Shamila. Are you perhaps yourself a cliche?
See, I've wondered that. Yeah. I have, because I'm like, I don't look at the women's profiles, right?
Yeah.
And I will admit that it is incredibly difficult to write these. It's a pain, and I often am like, I hate writing these profiles, but you just got to put something there, right?
Because you're selling yourself. It's advertising.
It is. And at the end of the day, you sell the things that you think people would be most interested to swipe on or click on or whatever. Yeah.
Sim, you're being very quiet.
Well, I mean, just listening to you guys, it's kind of a mix of everything. I think most of the problem is that you really just don't know how to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know how to kind of like tell who you are. Part of the reason that's why you're kind of on the dating app, because it's so much more easier to express yourself digitally than actually to walk up to someone and kind of like, hey, what's up? You know,
I'm
a sapiosexual.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, sapiosexual is one of those things that you think it kind of sound cool. And cliches, I was on dating apps until I met my current girlfriend, also on a dating app.
Oh.
Yeah. But the cliches and kind of things that I see that was kind of odd for me was like the main one, well, not main one, the very few was also like, no hookups, please, you know, or just here for friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No hookups, please, I understand. But the just here for friends thing was very confusing to me.
I'm like, why are you on a dating app if you're here for friends?
Exactly. Yeah.
Men do that too.
Yeah.
It's not just
exactly,
women.
Exactly, right. You know, my friends are like, you know, like that's because they just want to put a barrier. They want to kind of like make sure that you don't come in full, but like they can be ambiguous about things.
Well, it's just, make friends first and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think so. And then another one that really boggles my mind is when there's pictures of them and their spouse.
Or pictures of them with like a child, and you're just kind of like, is that your child? Is that your
niece? The child thing is okay because single parents can be on dating apps
and
as well.
It's fine, but
they don't say anything.
They don't say anything.
Right.
Or there'll be pictures of them and like four other people in every photo, and they're just like, which one is you?
Yeah. No, their one is to show that they have friends and they're fun, and most of them is at a party background. See, so. Actually, you can see the profiles where people kind of like take their time to curate it nicely. And I appreciate that because you're putting thought into portraying yourself. And you can see those that are kind of just simply kind of like, you know, I'm just going to put it out there and all. And, you know, they don't put much thought in it. And I look at the profiles that kind of like, you know, they put the nicer photos and they have like a better, they write a profile with like, for me, what gets me are puns or just very simple kind of like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I like this.
So it gets you as in you like that?
Yeah, that kind of stands out to me. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. Because most of the times, like for a guy on a dating app, what you tend to usually see is a whole bunch of emojis. The profile is written in a whole bunch of emojis, you know, or a list of like, this is my horoscope, and I mean 3-4 things is okay, but this one is like, you know, an entire row that you kind of like, okay, I'm like,
yeah. Oh, Sharmila, have you done this?
No, I've not done this, okay, but I've seen these profiles. It's all coming screaming back to me.
And there's the one that was my favorite. Is like, if you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
Oh,
I'm like,
what
are you? Are you a toddler? Like, I mean, just, you know.
Well, for me, mercifully, I met my wife. We got married quite some time ago now, 15 years, I think, and long before the age of dating apps
or emojis
emojis. Oh, I still exist in an age before emojis. And but yeah, I mean, if I had to write a profile, it'd be damn hard. I mean, it would be, I don't know, basically I stay at home and cry and smell of urine and please save me. I mean, that's the honest one, isn't it?
I understand. How do you kind of like put your entire personality, who you are, into that one paragraph, right? So I understand the struggle, you know, kind of like what makes it difficult too. But again, you know, it's not that difficult to kind of like just, you know, hey, I like this, you know.
I'm okay with that, actually. And I'm actually okay with photos that are just photos of yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have to have photos of you doing cool things or seemingly traveling to 20
places.
What's
your photo there, Sharmila?
I'm trying to think.
You have a photo. Come on, you
know. Of course, I have a photo.
So, what is it? What are you? Are you skydiving?
They're actually my Facebook profile pictures, because you can link your Facebook to your app and then pick which pictures you want.
So it's just a picture of you.
Yes, pretty much.
In like your best clothes ever, or
well, obviously because your Facebook profile pictures are going to be pictures that you think you look decent in, right?
Right. Yeah. But it's like you being active. No,
I'm not very active, to be honest.
But Sim, you see, Sim, we have, this is a scientific. We have a person here who has been successful.
Yeah.
So what did you say, Sim?
I met my girlfriend on Bumble, and she reached out. You know, Bumble, it's the settings is that like you can match with someone, but it's not the guy that speaks first. It's the girl that speaks first.
That's right.
And within 24 hours, if you don't kind of like if you don't talk to each other, then you just like kind of like unmatch and you move on. But I think about the point about the pictures is also partly, maybe it's also because they don't know how to put it down in words, so they try to let the pictures speak for themselves. So like with the travel pictures, you're hoping that maybe something in common with the person that you would speak to is that like you post a photo of you in London or something and you match with someone that, oh, I've just got back from London or something like that, you know. So it starts off with a conversation point.
I have a theory that men on apps, dating apps, should get their female friends to curate their photos.
Oh yeah, I got
because
that.
Guys are really bad at picking good pictures of themselves.
Yeah, I got that. I actually like I did my profile and like I was like I asked my close female friends. They're like, what do you think? They're like, no, you need to do this.
Right.
No, you should
I do that,
that
for my male friends too.
I had one of those like badly written profiles and they kind of like changed it up. And why don't you know, you're good at puns. Why don't you put in a pun instead and all? So
Well, we have to move on, but I am fascinated by this. But also at the same time, I'm so pleased I don't have to do this.
But it's the new norm. It's the new norm.
It is a new norm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that the apps are bad. I'm just saying, you know, just the
do it for research, Cam.
What do you mean do it for research?
I don't mean actually meet someone.
Well, you
I'm
have
saying,
to. I mean, how do you? Yeah, I mean, that is.
Download the app, check it out, see what's like.
Oh, that just seems wrong.
tell your wife first.
Not even more. I don't know what.
do it together with your wife. Yeah. Might be a fun activity.
So she walks in. It's like, it's not what you think. No, I'm not going down that road. Okay. So anyway, good luck with that one, Sharma.
Thank you.
And Sim, I guess, you know, I don't know. Well done. And so anyway, we move on though to topic number two. Award shows. Are they still relevant?
Yes, so this comes off like the recent, I think, Emmys that came on. And like, I mean, I didn't really watch the Emmys. I just read the news about who won and what. But it got me thinking about, like, you know, award shows in general. Like earlier this year was the Oscars. So it kind of just got me like whether, you know, are they as important as maybe they used to be, or were they ever important? Because I think as the way we watch TV, the way we watch movies change, these award shows, I would say they're kind of like slowly losing relevance. Because back then, maybe, you know, when you watch these movies, when you watch these award shows, they are kind of like, whoa, you know, this actor won Best Actor. It must be like the kind of like the best actor of that year and all. But now that, you know, really small niche independent movies are coming out with really great actors that you've never heard of, and it's much more easy accessible to kind of like watch and consume them, you kind of slowly start to form your own opinions, right? So it just makes me feel like these award shows are slowly losing their relevance. And I think also partly because of like something like I think recently or last year, was it this year? I can't remember, the Oscar So White movement, you know, kind of perpetuates this kind of like this for the industry, by the industry feel that I have about these award shows.
Which is what it is though. But Sharma, you're nodding your head in agreement.
No, yeah. I agree and I don't. I mean, it's a weird thing, right? I used to love the Oscars anyway. They are slowly starting to feel a little out of touch. Mm. But I do like these awards because what they tend to do is maybe honor or award movies that are not just driven by blockbuster potential or the box office and so on. But at the same time, I think the problem is that the people behind these awards are so woefully out of touch. They're so behind, you know, what the audience wants to watch. I mean, The Dark Knight, how many years ago was it nominated for an Oscar and it didn't win?
2008.
Yeah. And how many years did it take for Black Panther to make it to a Best Movie nominee? And still, we are talking about when the first superhero movie is going to win an award.
Yeah, yeah.
Christopher Nolan has never won an Oscar.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Dark Knight was terrible. Well, not terrible. It was like, oh. Really?
Dark Knight is the gold standard of superhero movie scam.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I think for me also, another not symptom, but another kind of like cause or whatever happens out of this is you tend to end up having movies being made for awards.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
The kind of like stereotype for a Oscar winning best picture is that, you know, it's a period movie, you know, and then you have like this destitute war hero that's returned.
Someone who puts on prosthetics.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right, you know. So then it just makes everything feels dated.
A
right?
Really beautiful actress who dresses ugly.
Mm, exactly, yes. Right. Or a 40-year-old portraying
that's
a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
But, exactly.
But, I mean, yeah, sure, the Oscars, the things that win the Oscars are middlebrow. Mm-hmm. It's always middlebrow. So comic strip movies will eventually, when it's accepted that that is now the middle brow.
So at the point at which nobody else cares about them anymore, that's when the Oscars will give them an award.
No, I don't think. I mean, I think that I haven't seen The Joker,
mm-hmm.
but from what I've read about it, it is striving to be going in the vein of The Dark Knight, going in that direction. Mm-hmm. And as more... Gosh, I mean, if you have superhero movies where it's like they're getting a divorce or something and it's like they're fighting over custody of the child, then, yeah, then you Kramer, Superman versus whoever. But I don't know. I don't know. I come from a different generation where everything was curated for me.
Mm.
And so I accepted the thing that there'd be this, the Oscars, that some unknown group of people would choose that this is the best movie. And then we would talk around that. But... And I suppose, yeah, for you now coming with...
It's social media, you know. It's kind of like on Twitter, on Facebook.
Yeah.
Your friends
yeah.
will tell you
the,
like...
The tastemaker model has broken down, right? Mm-hmm. And your tastemakers are no longer the people who are necessarily at the top. There's a huge movement of people from our level or from social media or niche audiences. And by the time the awards come around, everyone's already decided what they want to watch.
Like Game of Thrones, right? Yeah. You know, like right the Game of Thrones fever kind of like, I wouldn't say died down, but I mean, disappointment aside, you know, to suddenly see them being nominated for Emmys, you're like, too late. It's kind of dated, and like, you know, we've already formed our opinions. You know, most of the people have already formed their opinions on who's the best in Game of Thrones and stuff like that.
Okay, but Sharma, can I ask you? You're a big fan of Bollywood movies.
Yes.
Indian movies, shall we say? They have their award ceremonies,
mm-hmm.
and from what I've seen, it's a hell of a show.
It's an extravaganza.
It's an extravaganza, yeah.
But it's very commercial and very, very mainstream. So usually they reward the films that are the big splashy movies with the big splashy performances and actors. It's very rarely an indication of quality.
But the show itself is fun.
Yes, the show is fun. There's performing, there's lights and costumes, and yeah.
So isn't that also what an awards show should be, is just a fun celebration of the year that was passed?
Which actually the Oscars have sort of stopped being, right? They've started something like the Oscars. They take themselves so seriously, mm-hmm. that it's so much about the upper echelons of cinema that it's not that fun. The ceremonies are not fun to watch anymore.
Yeah. I think the kind of award actually you think that would still have relevance is the Kids' Choice Award.
Oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. Every year, you know.
Okay, well, I never have watched them, but are you two ever going to be watching these awards ever again?
Highlights reels.
Yeah, not in full. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's awards shows. But in a moment, when we talk, because we're so up to the minute on A Bit of Culture, we're talking about a brand new film director by the name of Quentin Tarantino here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Sharmila Ganesan, and Sim Weeboon. And now, with topic number three, I'd like to talk and ask about Quentin Tarantino.
Who? Who is this upstart?
I know, it's amazing. Yeah. No, I know we are. Okay, so he's been around for a while. But the thing is, I feel like he's probably one of the most influential filmmakers around. When I meet up with filmmakers in their 30s and 40s now, they really want, certainly their first movies, they really wanted to make a Tarantino. They wanted to be Tarantino. And so I always watched out for him because it's like, he's so influential, and yet I personally haven't heard him being spoken of as being one of the greats, or even potentially one of the greats. His movies are a bit hit and miss, but I must say there are certain movies that he's made that really just have lodged themselves in my mind, and I actually think of them quite often. They come back to me in a way that other movie makers haven't done. And for instance, Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like a fun film in a way. It's sold as being a fun film. A young black man in pre-Civil War slavery America is going to rescue his wife. But it's a shocking movie. And one of the things that it did, that movie, that I had not seen before, but I knew existed, was something that Charles Darwin once said. When he was passing through Brazil, which was then a slave country, he said he started talking to a slave. And he was shocked, and he couldn't comprehend why the slave suddenly had so much fear at being spoken to. And Django Unchained illustrated that in a way that I'd never seen before in a movie.
So I think Tarantino is like a filmmaker's filmmaker. Mm. A lot of directors love his movies because he loves movies. Yeah. Most of his movies are references. They're reference loops. They reference previous films, his own films, cinema in general. And I think the sort of his most recent release, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is almost like the ultimate realization of that. And people even call it navel gazing. But I love Tarantino, and I've loved him since I watched, I think, must have been since Reservoir Dogs. And I think there's just something about his movies. It's like there are bits and pieces of things hidden in them, like these little references that can either be pop culture, it can be history, or... I think he's a very smart filmmaker. He's not necessarily... His films aren't always the kind of things most people like to watch.
No, and some of them are real turkeys.
Like what?
Furious Eight?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. Yeah. That film, why bother making that movie?
I didn't love it. But the whole, it's that classic everyone trapped in a room trope, right? And that's what Tarantino does. He picks a classic film trope and explores it.
But then he filmed it on 70mm,
mm-hmm.
which is an incredibly high quality film stock that has only ever been used in four films before, including Lawrence Arabia. Yeah. And it's all in one room. Mm-hmm. Why the hell shoot that on 70 mil?
Why not? Right?
Okay, yeah. Fine.
No,
fine.
I mean, I think, I don't know, I disagree. I think he is one of the greats, you know, because, I mean, films like Kill Bill, you know, Pulp Fiction, I mean, they are in itself a pop cultural reference. Yeah. And if you have achieved that, you are, it's hard to say you're not one of the greats, right? And like, there are a lot of great filmmakers out there, but I think Quentin Tarantino occupies a very special space where when you watch a Tarantino movie, you immediately know that it's a Tarantino movie. You know, the soundtrack used, the fast cuts, you know, the pop cultural reference and the sudden burst of violence that is so ridiculous, you know. Like, when you watch it, you kind of like know, like, oh, this is definitely a Tarantino. Or when you watch another filmmaker kind of like present their film, you can see a Tarantino influence in that film. And, you know, if you do that, I think you are one of the greats. I mean, to me, he is one of the greats because, like, I love his films. And, like, I watched a Tarantino film, which is Pulp Fiction, and at a point of my life where I'm slowly being exposed to very different types of films, you know. So his, whatever genre that he occupies was new to me. I've never seen a film that's been made like Pulp Fiction. So watching it, I was like, whoa, this is great.
So he's one of the few directors, I don't even know if there are any others, whom people will go to watch a movie because it's directed by Tarantino. Yes. Not even a Christopher Nolan, I think, can claim that because he makes films with big stars. But Tarantino, people will go watch a Tarantino movie even if you don't know anyone in them. Yeah.
Well, definitely one filmmaker who shares that would be Steven Spielberg.
Yes, that's true.
And the two of them have immersed themselves throughout their lives in the movies. But I think that the difference between Spielberg and Tarantino is that Tarantino has created inside his films universes that are purely cinematic, mm-hmm. in that they the morality, the way that people look, the way they live, the things that they could possibly do only exist in the movies. Whereas Spielberg tries to sort of have echoes of real life. And so when I was watching Inglourious Bastards, mm-hmm. which is another movie that's really stuck with me.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Right. Hans Landa.
Because for me, I was watching it and there are set points in history which would determine what plot can possibly be. So the Second World War ended in 1945, just around the time when Hitler shot himself in the head in a bunker in Berlin in May. So I'm thinking, I'm watching this movie, and it's like, well, that's a set point in history. We cannot change that. And then at the end of the movie, spoiler alert. It's like 10 years now, isn't it? spoiler alert, the protagonist, they kill Hitler and the entire Nazi senior regime in a cinema in Paris in 1943.
Yeah.
And that just blew my mind.
It's amazing, right?
It's brilliant. I mean.
It's like, hang on, me as a real human, as a person who's viewing this film, suddenly I actually don't exist because my history is determined by events that happened then. My parents wouldn't have met, etc.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's increasingly as his movies have grown, he's created a universe within themselves. I mean, the Vega brothers, the Green Apple Cigarettes. You're almost supposed to believe it's a Tarantino world.
Yes.
And the latest film, and I don't want to spoil it because really you should watch it without knowing what you're watching, feeds into that. This idea that all of his stories exist in their own reality, which may not necessarily be the reality we live in.
Tarantinoverse.
So it's a collection. It's a comic strip collection on its own shelf. Its own.
In a way, yes.
It occupies its own reality, kind of like how the Marvel Cinematic Universe has its own reality. So the Tarantino universe kind of like has its own reality. And I think another part of why I like Tarantino is he's unashamed of his work. You know, he has his own kind of like way of doing things, his own film. Like, you know, it's so violent and it's so ridiculous. But he doesn't care about the critics. You know, he's all like, you know, like you don't go to like a Metallica concert and ask them to turn down the volume. You know, you watch my films because you know what you're expecting. You know? So critics may say this and that, but you know, I don't care. I'm doing this.
So both of you are cool with the violence and the basically the sadism.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's what you expect. It's
so
what you
Tarantino
expect.
Is off late, especially criticized a lot for being very anti-female.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially violence against
very
women.
Very masculine.
Yeah, yeah, so I've had to sort of rethink how I feel about his films. And I've come to the conclusion that I still don't mind them. No, mostly because
you're like a man with a tiger.
Oh, come on.
Skydiving.
I think he doesn't expect you to take it seriously. He uses violence the way people use satire or comedy.
It's fun. It's just
it's
fun.
It's fun. There's so much blood and gore that you can't possibly be taking it seriously.
I would say that up to a point, but in Django Unchained, there's a brilliant and terrifying scene where, spoiler alert, where we first meet the Leonardo DiCaprio character, where he has two people fight to the death for people's entertainment. Yeah. And again, I thought that was... Because normally, yes, I kind of accept that the Tarantino's violence is kind of like comic book and it's fun. But this was visceral and terrifying, and these people were going to kill each other. And this was also a description of a historical reality.
So that, for me, is why it worked, though, right?
Because it worked, but then... Yeah. So then you can't say that his violence is fun. Because
That scene was not played as being fun. Where else the scenes in Kill Bill, for instance, where they're like spurts of blood just painting the screen red, those are meant to be fun. The only time I've actually been bothered was actually in Hateful Eight, when the female character, Jennifer Jason Leigh, there's this scene where she gets punched in the face, like repeatedly. That to me felt like it was... getting to a point, especially because everyone else was a man and the context of that scene.
And she wasn't just being punched repeatedly at that one moment.
No, it was like all the time.
Kept coming back to punch her.
And that slowly came to a point where I was like, this is starting to feel...
But isn't that him, though? Isn't that what he's trying to do to you? I'm not saying we should punch him in the face, but it's sort of like he wants to make you feel very uncomfortable.
Right, yeah, exactly. So I started thinking, I think that's what he wants me to feel. He wants you to feel... take you to that point where you're like, am I okay with this?
Mm. And actually, even in the cinema, punching people in the face is not a nice thing. Yeah.
I think it's just like when you watch something at Tarantino, it's important to separate the kind of like the entertainment and reality. You know, you watch it, you get entertained by it, but I mean, make your own adult decision to like, I'm not going to take a samurai sword and slash someone in half, you know. So you kind of know that when you go into a Tarantino movie, it's very violent, it's very hyper-masculine and all. And if you go in with that idea and you kind of like come out with like, okay, yeah, he met all that criteria and I was entertained, and that is the end of the story, then that is the end of the story. I mean, when you start watching, if you're so easily influenced by a Tarantino movie to go out and start kind of do whatever it is, then you know, you need to start sitting down and talking to your friends about your life. Okay. But I understand the connotation of influence.
You may not have friends.
Yeah. But I understand that sometimes it's very hard to kind of like talk about influence and like, you know, like what you see in TV will influence kind of like, you know, your larger decisions in life. But I think with Tarantino, because it's so cliche, because it's so over the top, and there's, I wouldn't say there is a kind of like intended subliminal messaging in his work to kind of like force you to be violent towards other people, that I think you know what to expect and you go in and you watch it. Yeah.
Okay, we're wrapping this one up though, but quickly, Sharmila, I know you don't want to do any spoilers with the new movie.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
But, you know, good or bad?
I loved it. Yeah. I really loved it.
It's 3 hours long, right?
Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio were amazing. It is a long movie, but really, if you love Hollywood and if you enjoy Tarantino, I would say give it a go.
But surely we can also name a Tarantino movie that we hate. Come on. Really? You like them all?
Possibly the one of the Grindhouse Death Proof ones.
Terrible.
Are not my favorite.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. What was that? Producer Ali is like, that's his favorite, isn't it?
I didn't say they were terrible. Like, if I had to rank them, they would be
on the bottom rank, right?
Yeah. Okay. And it showed one thing. He cannot act.
I forgot that he was in them.
Yeah. Anyway, so we move on. And so we move on, though, to the final part of the show, recommendations, where I recommend something that we think might be of interest. And Sharmila goes first.
Well, I would like to recommend the work and Instagram account of this local Malaysian artist illustrator called Charis Loke. Her Instagram handle is Charislokee. That's her name, Charis Loke. Mm-hmm. Very clever illustrator. Her works are, you know, very fun, very accessible, but layered as well. I first got to know her when she did this series a few years ago called The Geeky Baju Project, mm-hmm. where she essentially did these illustration series of sci-fi or fantasy inspired costumes, but Malaysian style. So like Lord of the Rings, Baju Kurung, Hunger Games, Salwar Kameez, and very, very fun and cool and smart as well, because she has all of these quirky references from books and mythology. And her latest series that she's working on, that she's put up on her Instagram page, is on the haze, and some really powerful work, like slightly whimsical, but also very strong and dark, and she has a lot of commentary, and she also puts up a lot of work in progress on her page and her inspirations. She also designs book covers, so sometimes she puts up her covers that she's working on and then explains, you know, the thought process behind the design. Very, very interesting artist. And
she sounds amazing.
Yeah. Definitely follow her on Instagram or Twitter and check out her work.
The name again?
Karis Lok.
And you would find this on...
On Instagram would probably be the best place. I think she has a Facebook page as well.
Okay, cool. Sounds great. Sim.
Yeah, so I have a... it's either a Twitter or Instagram account, but it's called Nature is Metal. So
Nature is a metal.
No, Nature is Metal. Like
Nature is metal.
The heavy metal music. So okay. I don't know. It kind of brings me back to when my younger days when I was watching Nat Geo, and you watch kind of like the visceral force of Mother Nature, where, you know, animals and like the natural disasters, you know, just basically showing that, you know, you have no power over them whatsoever. Because they're just like video, short videos on Twitter, Instagram, where you have like an alligator tearing apart a truck, you know, a Komodo dragon eating a monkey. Oh, well, I mean, okay.
Just we're eating a what?
Eating a monkey, you know. I mean, warning, you know, if you're uncomfortable with these type of stuff, then don't go for it. But if, you know, if you're fascinated like me by this type of stuff, then, you know, go check it out. I mean, because you have like videos of silverback gorillas kind of like fighting, and they're like, you know, they're like quite violent. They're like, you watch them, you're like, wow, these guys would tear me apart in a second.
He's showing us a video of
silverback gorillas.
It is what it is.
Yeah, but it's I don't know, for me, it's this weird fascination where kind of like you see it and you see nature and the raw power that it has, you know. And I think I'm fascinated by it also because all of these very climate eco interest advocates, where, you know, people are coming out to say that, you know, we need to save the planet, you know? And it got me thinking, like, well, I mean, we gotta save the planet for us, because I think after all, at the end of the day, you know, Mother Nature is just gonna be fine, because whatever that's happening now is probably them going like, we need to get rid of like these
humans,
humans that are like causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, be like 60 foot cockroaches roaming the earth.
Who knows, man, who knows.
Okay, all right, cool. Nature is Metal.
Yes. On Twitter, on Instagram.
I can't say it, can I? I was so bad. Nature's Metal.
You almost got there. Yeah, but still, next you'll have a Tinder account.
Just didn't feel right. No.
You're going to be like Benjamin Button in reverse age.
Okay. So my recommendation is actually following on from what you were just saying there, Sim. Mine's very simple, and it's a bit of a cop-out in a way, but Greta Thunberg.
Mm.
I'm just in awe.
You're just recommending her.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what I'm recommending, really, but I'm just in awe of this 16-year-old girl who she's been dominating the headlines for the last few weeks, months. She started the school strike, which young Malaysians have been wanting to do, have done, were first of all not allowed to do it. And she did her first one on her own just a year ago, and now, goodness.
Did you see her UN speech?
It was amazing.
Terrifying.
I think what's really fascinating about me is the how many like right-wing adults that she's triggering. You know, like she's like just like making them blow up in like all shapes and forms.
There are all of these articles about why older men find Greta Thunberg so threatening.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, actually, if you look up on social media, like, it's so preposterous. Like, I saw a few images where they're kind of like comparing her to Nazi propaganda by the left. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And their responses are so angry and visceral and like Tourette's kind of like,
yeah, like, okay.
And so base, because they criticize her looks or the way she talks, like, the girl is 16, you're an adult, come on.
And And so she and a number of other instances have really made me feel that young people are quite cool, actually.
Thank you.
They can.
No, not you, Sim. You're like, I'm talking, you're old.
You might be the youngest of young
compared to you.
Yeah, that not doesn't count. I'm talking about seriously young people. And I think they're pretty cool. And I think that, well, I mean, good luck to them. But, you know, sorry what we did to the planet. Greta Thunberg. I don't know what I'm recommending, but
just go on YouTube and look up all of her speeches.
She's quite remarkable. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. And so only remains me now to thank special guests, Shamana Ganesan.
Thank you, Cam.
And Wee Woon.
Thank you for having me.
I got your name right.
Yeah.
And Shamana, can I just ask you one question? So you were saying about these dating apps, and I'm not doing it, okay. Right? But just for our listeners' sake, of the many you've done, what's the best one?
Bumble.
That's
Bumble got quality a bit. Like
yeah, that. A little bit more quality, less scammers, less creeps.
Yeah, less creeps. Yeah. Okay. I think because they let
creepy women as well.
I've not come across. Okay. But I know from talking to my female friends, there are a lot of creepy guys out there on
Bumble has
apps.
The fewest.
Yeah, because because
you get to message them first.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I am fascinated by the fact that guys want to pose with tigers. That just
it's a very masculine thing to do. You know,
Me away. Why would you? Hey, I'm going to get a photograph done with a tiger.
It's the one in Thailand. You know. That typical one.
I actually think I have a photo with a pug.
With a pug.
See, is that how you met your girlfriend?
No. But, Sim, with your video, I think that'd be a pug being eaten by a tiger.
ripped apart by a gorilla.
A pug eating a tiger.
A pug eating a tiger. Okay, anyway, we must wrap this one up. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, two of you, for being here. And please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.